You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spine number 67, 1980's Night of the Demon, and a bevy of crazy Bigfoot pictures featuring Bigfoot walking, Bigfoot stalking, Bigfoot ripping a biker dude's dick off, Bigfoot peeping, Bigfoot sleeping, Bigfoot swinging a man's intestines like a lasso, Bigfoot growling, Bigfoot scowling, Bigfoot smashing two Girl Scouts together like flesh cymbals, Bigfoot pooping, Bigfoot snooping, Bigfoot making a silly face while he nuts in an underage girl. Martin.
Yes.
I'm saving your soul, you ungrateful bitch!
When the moon hangs high on the breast of the lake, and the bite of the wind is like a slap in the face, a legend of horror lurks in the haze. It's Bigfoot. A giant of a creature, all covered with hair, as tall as a timber and strong as a bear. Y'all better not go walking out there with Bigfoot.
Another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin.
Yes.
We're doing a whole episode about your cousin, Bigfoot.
I'm a fuzzy, fuzzy man.
You're a fuzzy, super tall man. And also, this is like, we always talk about like which episodes are Jacob coded versus which episodes are Martin coded. I feel like a whole episode about Bigfoot movies is like one of the more Martin coded things we could ever do.
I was thinking about it, and watching these movies, I think I figured out why I like Bigfoot movies, is they're pure Americana. Like,
yeah.
There's really, like, Bigfoot, like UFOs, is such an American National Enquirer, weird X-Filesy kind of thing, which is all the stuff that I love, but it's such an American pastime, and it's also into just like urban legends of America, which I'm obsessed with.
That's what I was going to bring up. Yeah. Is that like all of these movies kind of understand that Bigfoot is an urban legend above anything else, and work that storytelling aspect into their own narratives in one way or another. But I mean, it's one of the things that we talk about even off mic when we're not talking about movies is shit. Like, you know, where you're from originally, the Midwest, and you have, your parents have, I should say, a cabin in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Is that we talk about like the Hodag.
Yeah.
And like a regional myths and things that we grew up with, like me with like the Jersey Devil,
yeah,
like right across the bridge from Philadelphia and everything. But like, Bigfoot, I feel like, is the ultimate version of those legends. Like, it's the one that,
yeah,
like, is almost shorthand. Like, to give you an example, I was watching the documentary,
yeah,
that we're going to cover here, In Search of Bigfoot, on the porch, and Shapiro, our buddy, comes out and looks and just goes, "No, this shit's all bullshit, right?" And I'm like, yeah, I know it's not real, but I'm like, but that's, you know, that's part of the appeal of it, is that it's a story that's been told so many times and by so many people that it's believed to be true. And like there's literally, I'm watching a documentary from the 70s about guys who have devoted their entire lives to going out into the Pacific Northwest wilderness and trying to find this 7 foot tall, hairy monkey man named Bigfoot. Like, it's just, it's part of who we are as a people.
I actually, it's a really good point. And it made me think of, my friend was one of the producers on the Mr. McMahon doc for Netflix, the Vince McMahon doc.
Oh, I haven't watched that yet. I'm really excited for it.
It's phenomenal. He worked on it for 4 years, and it's really, really good. But they kind of get into...
Because that's Chris Smith who did Tiger King?
Yep, and American Movie.
Yeah.
It's what's interesting about that movie and a lot of current wrestling documentaries I've watched. It's a similar idea of the shared delusion, right? Of a lot of people, most people watch wrestling. Everyone knows it's fake, but they want it to be real. They want it to, but they play into, oh shit, Stone Cold's back. He's running out. And it's this kind of like playing into the fun. And I think a lot of people for Bigfoot, I have some friends who've been like jokily obsessed for years. They collect Bigfoot like memorabilia and they buy each other like doilies and shirts. So it is this like thing of like, it's like Loch Ness. It's like Nessie, right? Like there are people who believe that she's real. But most people are like, no, this is this fun, this kind of fun thing we play into, which is also a way of like, it's also, I think, a connection with nature. Like, they really get into that in the documentary of, I think loving Bigfoot is this way of loving the unknowable side of nature.
Yeah.
You know, like the mystery.
It's kind of Herzogian.
Yes, exactly. It's like a Geary or like that kind of feel.
So the movies that we are going to cover here are mostly in the 70s.
Yep.
And we've got The Legend of Boggy Creek, which is a big Martin favorite. Shriek of the Mutilated from Michael Findlay. One of the strangest movies ever made. In Search of Bigfoot, which is the aforementioned documentary that we cover. Creature from Black Lake, which I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say of the movies that isn't our featured title, that's probably your favorite.
Yeah, easily. It's, yeah.
And then Night of the Demon. The outsider, psychopathic Bigfoot slasher.
Yep.
That, like, we watched this together for the first time.
You had seen it. I had not.
I had seen it before, but it was your first time seeing it when the Severin Blu-ray came out a year ago.
Yeah, a year or two. You were in your old place, so.
Yeah, I was at my old place. We were in the movie room. And I remember just hooting and hollering over this movie because it truly is just almost like, let's turn it up to 12 insane.
Yeah.
In terms of just how violent and also just like how stacked the movie is in terms of the kills, the gore, the nudity. It delivers on every possible like insane, crazy, like part of Bigfoot that you could possibly explore. Like he just turns all of it up to 11, and it's exactly what you want out of a trash horror movie.
Yeah. I mean, you were saying off mic, it's the kind of thing that, you know, at a film fest or at like coming across at 2 a.m. on some UHF channel or whatever.
Right.
Just being like, what?
It feels less like a movie and more like a transmission from another dimension.
It's like a Videodrome movie.
Yeah. Just like you're just kind of like, this is real?
Yeah.
Like somebody made this? But I threw in a couple extras too when I was just watching my stuff. And I wanted to bring one up because it's actually written by one of your favorite screenwriters. As I watched The Abominable Snowman, also known as The Abominable Snowman of the Himalayas, the mm-hmm. Hammer horror Abominable Snowman movie.
It's Cushing, where right?
Peter Cushing yeah. leads an expedition team up into the mountains to find the Yeti. But it's written by Nigel Neal.
Yep.
It's black and white. And it almost... It's totally different from all the other movies we're about to cover because it feels more like an old school adventure serial than it does like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. And the Yeti looks fucking cool. And like,
I saw it years ago.
It just has super cold, almost like Carpenter's The Thing level cold vibe to it. Cause it's just these guys out in the Arctic looking for this beast. And like, I was really quite taken with it. It's quite good. And also just to see Cushing actually play a good guy instead of one of the bad guys for once, that's a nice little treat too.
Remember liking that one a lot. It was it's a fun, pretty good. I think I watched it in like an afternoon kind of movie.
1957. It's kind of right at the cusp of when Hammer horror turns to color, becomes like, you know,
the Dracula,
you know, workshop that gives you all of these great, you know, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, riffs on these iconic characters. But like this one, pretty solid.
Hell
man.
Yeah.
But let's talk about The Legend of Boggy Creek. Do you want to take this?
Yeah, so...
Because you're a big Charles B. Pierce fan.
Yes, yeah, so Legend of Boggy Creek, I will say it is my least favorite of the main Charles B. Pierce films. Like, Town That Dreaded Sundown is one of my all-time favorite movies. And I really love The Evictors as well.
Right.
Legend of Boggy Creek is... Honestly feels closer to In Search of Bigfoot. It feels like a straight doc. Or a nature doc, you'd set off Mike at one point. But Pierce was, I wouldn't say he was the first, but he was really kind of spearheaded. What we see in a lot of these films is this kind of, I wouldn't say mockumentary, but almost in the way we have found footage films today of shot any style if you're watching a documentary with these interviews. But with this film in particular, it's based on a real monster, the Falk, the Falk monster in Arkansas, which is where Charles B. Pierce is from. A lot of his stories all are about real stories, like the Town That Dreaded Sundown is about the Prowler from the 40s in Texarkana. And a lot of the people interviewed in the film were acting in these scenes are the real people. Like, it's almost like Zoe Zhao with, like, the writer, like, getting these people to kind of play themselves. I will say on rewatch, it can be sloggy, but there's something in this film which I think carries over into a lot of them. Is again, there's a really kind of easy breezy Americana to them that it has like a hum to it, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
There's also a wholesome.
Yes. Almost like rated G when it came out. You know?
The tone is, I wrote in my notes here, Kitty Bigfoot, and that, or, and in parentheses, Stand by Bigfoot. Because it has that like coming of age, because it's all narrated almost as if. The protagonist is recalling the stuff from his youth and like how it kind of haunted him through the rest of his days up into adulthood, the same way that Richard Dreyfuss narrates Stand By Me and like these kind of frozen moments in amber that we look back on when we become adults with, you know, spouses and kids and of our own and jobs and everything, and that we look back on it and be like, there was that thing where we found that dead body, and that's always stuck with me. And in this case, it was that time that I saw Bigfoot.
I saw, their version of Bigfoot. And no, I agree. And, you know, we were kind of talking about earlier with like the documentary, there's a sense of it being about nature itself and the mystery of nature. But I think there is a kind of nostalgic longing in a lot of these stories of a longing for the past and a longing for like, that there's more to the world than what we're seeing, right? And you really, really get that with In Search of Bigfoot, which we'll get to in a bit. And there's also like a gamut we kind of run with the films we're going to talk about, from Bigfoot as a monster to Bigfoot as this kind of magical creature to be protected, you know? Because like they'll say, okay, he's scary, but some of these, obviously, neither demon being one extreme side of them being this like murderous.
He's a fucking rapist.
He's a rapist, you know, gut swinging monster. And then you have, I feel like out of all these films, Legend of Boggy Creek is kind of in the middle, because some of the stories are scary, but it does have this like halcyon days kind of. It makes it look really charming, like where they are, you know, that's just these long days sitting by the creek fishing. And those kind of, or running through the fields in your overalls, hopping over fences, you know?
Well, the dark flip side to this is even beyond Bigfoot is like something like Blair Witch, which this 100%. Was a huge influence on, because like Blair Witch, which I guess it's kind of maybe not coincidence that we're doing these Bigfoot movies at the same time that Blair Witch is basically turning 25, you know, but like, The Legend of Boggy Creek was a big influence on, you know, Blair Witch and the Blair Witch filmmakers, but it does a lot of the same things where, like, they're interviewing real people in the area.
Yep.
They made up the legend more or less, but they're, like, kind of trying to show how it's a part of the fabric of these people's lives in the same way that, you know, Bigfoot was in Boggy Creek. But, like, in the Blair Witch, there's nothing nice about the Blair Witch. It's something to be
truly evil.
Like, turned away. Like, do not go into the woods. Do not think about exploring it. It has, like, you know, the crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th vibe of, like, don't go up there. You're all doomed. You know, if you go after the Blair Witch, like, you're fucked.
Well, then you get the wild cut comes full circle, or one of the filmmakers behind Blair Witch makes Exists, which is a Bigfoot found footage film. So it comes all the way around again, you know, obviously they were inspired in that way. And I like Exists pretty well.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's good. It's a really solid. I played it my first year at South by, I think, 2014.
Okay.
It was a midnighter and it played. People really liked it.
What was that Bobcat Goldthwait?
Willow Creek.
Because that was like a found footage Bigfoot movie. Not bad.
Yeah, I like that one too. Well, I think what was really interesting about Bigfoot is it's really a pretty big sandbox because it's general enough you can do whatever you want with it. Like, you could do a horror film, you could do a comedy. I mean, we have Harry and the Hendersons. He's so part of the zeitgeist that you can go put him on a, you know, a cereal box or a lunch box.
I grew up with that movie. I loved it.
Awesome
John Lithgow performance in it.
And is it Rick Baker who did the, or is it Rob? Maybe Rob Bottin. Amazing.
It's one of the legends.
Yeah, amazing makeup.
But then let's do In Search of Bigfoot just kind of really quick. Directed by a guy, like produced and directed by a guy named Lawrence Crowley, who actually did two Bigfoot documentaries. Bigfoot Man or Beast is the other one. This is, since we're like the uninvented version of Boggy Creek almost, but like while we're talking about the different versions of Bigfoot, like this one is like the nice Bigfoot movie, to where it's just like they're going in hoping that they can get just like a big hug from the hairy guy. And it really does become, like you said, kind of like a nature doc. It's more about these people and their relationship to the outdoors and devoting all this time to exploring the outdoors as much as it is about hunting Bigfoot.
No, totally. Cause there's a really sweet, there's quite a few sweet moments in it. And I really like the main scientist who's kind of like the center of the movie. But there's a moment where he sent out a friend for a 5-day backpacking thing to kind of go scouting for Bigfoot. And you see him come back. It's a really natural moment where he says, the guy's like, he's like, how was it? He goes, well, I saw a cat on day one. Day two, he moved a little closer. Day three, I went home. And it's just these like funny, like kind of homely moments. But again, that's not about Bigfoot. It's about like these guys like being in nature together. And there's a wonderful scene of them hiking together. And it's like about friendship. It reminds me of a doc called Not Your Typical Bigfoot Movie, which I didn't get a chance to rewatch, but I love it. It's a shorter kind of like indie doc about these two older Bigfoot hunters, real people. And the sadness of, because the thing we can't ignore is that how many of the people featured in these stories are lower income Southerners?
Yeah.
You know, because there is a sense of exploitation to all these. Like, Boggy Creek is kind of a exploitation film, and it's, you know, you could watch it at a drive-in in New England and kind of like think almost the way.
Well, wasn't it produced as a regional drive-in
movie, I believe so,
too?
Yeah. So
to kind of cash in on that Southern circuit, the same way that, like, you know, Hal Needham and Burt Reynolds were making Smokey and the Bandit for, you know, the South.
Yeah.
They didn't even think that the movie would play in Northern movie theaters.
Yeah, exactly. And it's in people, and you get a lot of like, you know, Southern color, but there is a sense of,
but no Southern color, if you know what I'm saying.
No, not at all.
I don't think there are any black people or any real people of color in any of these movies.
I think there's, I don't believe so. They're very white in that sense. And they're very, again, they're, like you said, very drive-in kind of movies. But you have this feeling of, some of the films feel very judgmental of, it's kind of like poorer characters. Like, oh, these kind of, okay, these people are talking, but they really don't, you know, this might be BS, you know, or they have a more, again, I think that Charles B. Pierce's Legend of Boggy Creek is actually one of the nicer ones that he plays, but he's of that place. Like, that and The Evictors and Town of the Dread Sundown are all very much written from an insider's point of view. But this one, I think, I liked In Search of Bigfoot. It's a really beautiful speech where the main guy is talking. It's like 15 minutes in, and he's talking about why they're going for Bigfoot. And he's like, he goes, I feel bad hunting him because like he deserves to be alone. And it's, again, Bigfoot for him is like the spirit of nature. It's like a Miyazaki thing, right? Like,
it's almost like Dr. Manhattan, but stinkier.
I think there's something about the people who hunt too. I think this one, it feels like an episode of like Ghost Encounters, where it's people going, oh, what was that? Oh, what was that? I saw a shape. And it's like, we're all like, no, nothing fucking was there, dude.
No.
There's nothing there. You know,
you saw maybe a bear in the trees.
Exactly. All their encounters, especially in that one, are like, they're like, oh yeah, we saw it up on this ledge, and they go to where they saw it, and it's like a mile away on top of a hill that there was definitely Bigfoot up there. I'm like, that's like me looking at like the downtown Austin from my place.
I have a weird story about this movie, is that the first time I ever saw it was on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when I first moved to Austin, and it was a terror, back when Terror Tuesday was down at the Ritz at midnight for like $2 or whatever it was back in the day, $2 or $3. But there was a mystery screening, and everybody showed up because it was pretty much sold out, and everybody showed up thinking, oh, they're going to play like Dawn of the Dead, like something that they can't get the rights to. That's crazy, and we're not going to be able to talk about it, blah, blah, blah. And then fucking Josie Emba takes the stage. He's like, hey, guys. So, like, we're going to do, I'm a huge Bigfoot fan, and I found a 16-millimeter print of this documentary called In Search of Bigfoot. And you felt, like, the energy in the room just go, brrr. Because for the next 75 minutes, we basically sat through this nature doc, which is cute and all, but the whole time I was just thinking, like, if I walk into the lobby and I see him, I'm punching this motherfucker. It is midnight right now, and I'm watching a fucking Bigfoot nature doc when I thought I was going to be getting, like, Near Dark or some shit. Like, you're out of your fucking mind, sir.
Well, that guy is the king of bait and switch, because when I first moved to Austin, they're like, hey, we're going to show The Punisher on 35mm. No, sorry, this wasn't him. This was just Alamo. But I go to see The Punisher, Dolph Lundgren, they're like, all we have is a DCP. Now, if you want your money back, we understand, but we figure you'll stick around. I'm like, fuck you, right? And the person
introduced it. I own this on Blu-ray, sir.
And the person introduced it doesn't know shit about Dolph. And I was like, I'm going to grab the fucking mic. I'm going to get arrested here. And then, but it was, I went to see a 35mm print of Silent Night, Deadly Night, which was Joe's girlfriend's favorite movie, of course. And we show up. They're like, yeah, we couldn't get the print guys, but surprise, we have a new Agfa transfer 4K. Who's excited? I'm like, I also had this on 4K at home.
Right. Like, I could just be sitting in my living room with my belt unbuckled, drinking a beer and like hand down my pants like fucking Al Bundy enjoying this. But no, I'm in public now.
Yeah, for your girlfriend's birthday. So I'm gonna go play in traffic now.
And also, like, you could easily get a print of that because Harry Guero owns a print and you guys trade prints with him regularly.
Yeah.
Like, eat shit, brother.
Yeah, sorry. We went on a rabbit hole, but.
Well, speaking of the South, let's talk about the one movie in this lineup that is not from the South at all. The awesomely titled Shriek of the Mutilated from Michael and Roberta Finlay. You'd never seen this before, right?
Mm-mm.
What did you think?
I kind of love it.
It's gross, gnarly, very exploitative.
Very immature.
Very lo-fi. I think it's only made for like maybe $20,000, like maybe.
You can tell.
But like Michael Finlay and Roberta Finlay came from that same kind of class of New York filmmakers that produced like Andy Milligan, you know.
Yeah.
And this feels very much in the vein of something like Andy Milligan. Because they also worked in porno before.
You can't tell.
Yeah, I know, right? But, you know, Michael Finlay, it not invented, but kind of like refined what we know as the roughy, which were like with guys like Joe Sardo and everything, mm-hmm. which were more or less kind of like erotic thrillers or slashers where with like extra sex thrown in.
Yeah.
And it's usually to, you know, hence the title, rougher sex, we'll say.
Yeah.
But, like, that was kind of his bread and butter. He also worked in hardcore movies, worked in softcore movies. Roberta Finlay, you know, who would shoot and edit a lot of these movies with him, Like, she made her own movies on her own. There's a really great one that Vinegar Syndrome put a while back. It's actually an X-rated, like, hardcore movie called A Woman's Torment, which is almost like her version of Repulsion, about or the witch who came from the sea.
Yeah.
About a woman kind of having a nervous breakdown in a little seaside community, but cool. It also has, like, hardcore sex in it, too. Mm. But, like, that was the class of filmmaker that these guys kind of came from, and Shrieker the Mutilated feels of a part. It's kind of like when like Andy Milligan went from making like Seeds and like his kind of like bathhouse movies, yeah. his gay movies, and ended up making, you know, like Monstrosity or any of the horror films that he would make, like, yep. those weird little gothic movies, like, oh, Blood, yeah. and all those that he shot.
I borrowed your collection that one time, and I was like, what am I watching?
Yeah, like, they're almost anti-human weirdo movies.
Yeah. Well, this, I mean, I feel this feels like the Boss Baby thing, where it's like, oh, this is a lot like Boss Baby, since the guy's only ever seen Boss Baby.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I say it a lot, but, like, this is another film that feels of an ilk with, like Blood Feast, like a Herschel Gordon Lewis, you know? Yeah. And, but I mean it, yes, the quality, but also it's actually got a pretty creative pitch. Like, it's covered in, like, a mess of, like, bad storytelling and bad camera work and just scenes that go on forever of people just talking and talking and talking.
Also, Bigfoot looks like I guess it's the Yeti in this, technically, yeah. looks like a Muppet.
Yeah, and it's, but the twist of the film, and I was like, oh, this is actually really cool. And, like, if this were done for a bigger budget with this story, with a better production design, like, it's still, like, it's like, it has the freedom of, they didn't have to spend any money on it. They're like, oh, we could do whatever we want. And it actually is a pretty compelling story by the end.
Sure.
I mean, it is. I like that. I mean, can I just say the twist?
Yes.
Yeah, the twist, there is no Yeti, that it's this almost like experiment in fear that, and I connected to Blood Feast, obviously, for the reason that it's this group of cannibals, similar to it. I don't want to name the new film, so I'm going to ruin it. It's a newer film that we saw recently, we both really enjoyed, of this twist of, it's these culinary, they basically are cultists who also eat human flesh. But the way to get the flesh as delicious as possible is to have them scared to death. And I'm like, that's a pretty cool, pulpy setup for a horror movie.
Yeah, and the last, like, 20 to 30 minutes of this movie, there's a lot of, like, slow buildup, because it's, like...
A lot.
It's another one of... And it's one of the things that I want to talk about with the setup of a lot of these movies is that, like, I guess colleges in the 70s were just offering courses in Bigfoot, because so many of these movies revolve around, like, academics from local college go out in the wilderness to seek Yeti. And you're just like, sure, I guess. But, like, here... That's the setup for it, and they're like, we're going out into the wilderness, and it's really just, like, a bunch of backyards shot day for night in upstate New York.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a lot of weird ADR, and, like, the guy who plays the professor is, he looks like a retired porno actor at this point.
Yep.
And, like, it's a fun, weird little movie, but, like, it's kind of a slog the same way that a lot of the, you know, the Andy Milligan and Joe Sarno stuff and everything is kind of a slog until the last 20 to 30 minutes that go completely bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit I was scrolling my phone a little bit early on. I'm like, all right, like, the scene is probably about 2 pages worth of things happening stretched over 15 minutes.
Right.
And a lot of explaining. It's like, there's this whole talk about, she's like, no, I went out the back door. He's like, well, I would have heard you. Well, I went down through the wine cellar and out the back door. And it's just like a 5-minute conversation about what direction she took to get out of the house. It reminded me a little of
House. I want onions, house, and cheese.
And cheese. We have House on Tombstone Hill, that really shitty movie.
Oh, God.
It's the same thing where it's like, did you lock the door? No, I didn't lock the door. Did you?
Maybe I should check. Did you check? No, I didn't check.
I'm not crazy.
Are you going to check? It's yes, just... I might check.
And
what? Just fucking check the door.
But it is so of a type with, there's so many movies like that you and I have seen, right? Of like, they're it's like Ed Wood. They're like, they're playing for time. They're stretching.
They need a feature.
They probably have about 30 pages.
They've got 40 minutes of material, and they need fucking 70.
Yep. And Herschel Gordon Lewis did it too. You can tell.
Yeah.
You know, there's this longer,
Long scenes of people walking outside of the mansion, looking around, hoping to see Bigfoot. And it's just like, but then, you know, when you actually get to the reveal and like the psychotic breakdown that really takes up like the last 20 minutes of the movie, it's all kind of worth it.
Yeah. That's the meat. Like, now, yeah.
And it's worth noting, Michael Finlay was like a true exploitation, like guy who, like Andy Milligan, would shoot these movies for no money.
In like a week or two.
Like a week, you know, for 10, 20, 30 grand if he was lucky. And then sell them directly to like grindhouses on 42nd Street and stuff himself, own the prints, make the money back, and then basically just take that money and put it into his next movie. Essentially, he was like, he and Roberta Finlay were like a married assembly line. And by all accounts, too, Michael Finlay was not a great person. I think in his Sleazoid Express book, Bill Landis called him one of the nastiest men to ever come out of exploitation.
Ugh.
So you know what that probably implies. Yeah. Also died a true warrior's death at the top of the Pan Am building. So this movie's made at 1973. He only has 4 years left of life. And that he was on a helicopter with, I believe it was like 10 to 12 other people. It lands on the top of the Pan Am building. And then they're waiting to board. And as the helicopter's basically landing, it tilts over on its side. The rotor's still going. And proceeds to chop all of these people into ribbons and decapitates Michael Finlay. Like, it killed, like, 12
like
people.
Like Vic Morrow, kind of.
Well, yeah. And then, like, the rotors broke, flew into like, traffic and stuff and killed, like, random bypassers. Like, a real fucked up, like,
disaster.
Tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because the pilot couldn't land the helicopter correctly.
That's sad, man.
Sad. And gross.
Yeah.
And very graphic. And imagine, but also you wonder, like, if you get killed, like, by a helicopter rotor and it, you know, it's still spinning and it tilts into you, like, do you feel anything?
I hope not.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully we never find out.
If it takes your head off. Yeah. If it takes your hand off, you probably feel something. If it takes your head off, like, that's probably just that. And you just cut to black real quick.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your favorite of these movies, Creature from Black Lake.
Yes.
I stole this and put this on Letterboxd when I wrote about it too, but you very aptly described this as a Hal Needham movie, only without car chases and Bigfoot instead, which is like, it really is. And it's, again, two guys who are clearly Southern,
yeah,
but are
as Northerners from Chicago.
Yeah, they're playing Northerners from the University of Illinois,
yep,
going down to the South to investigate Bigfoot again. But like, the majority of this movie is just hanging out in trucks, hanging out in tents, talking to pretty girls, hanging out in sheriff's stations, bullshitting with like the JW Peppers of the world and everything.
Yep.
And like, there's a real laid back, jokey, goofy nature to this that honestly, when it becomes a straight up horror movie by the end and Bigfoot does show up and starts killing people, it's kind of not as good as the rest of it.
Nope. Agreed. It's one of those movies. It's very similar to the one we talked about on the pod of Boogans, right? Of it's all character and it's all texture.
It's all filler, no killer.
Yeah, and again, to repeat ourselves, but like with slashers, right? We like the characters in a lot of these old films, like Final Exam. The kills suck, but I like being with these people,
right?
And Pahu is one of my favorite horror characters. He is the most likable buddy you could ever ask for. He's this there's a subtle thing too of like, he's a Vietnam vet. He's older. He looks a lot older than the main character,
right?
But he's like a GI Bill kind of guy, right? And they have a really natural relationship. I can only imagine these guys were buddies off set. There's no way.
Oh yeah.
There's just no way they were not buddies, because the end scene is Pahu survives his attack. Actually, no. His friend stabs him accidentally when he's coming around.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much the descent when Juno kills the other girl with the axe. But it's a kind of wonderful scene of like, well, in the end, they found friendship kind of thing, but it really, really works. And it, I find it touching, but it's just like, you were like, I forgot I had said the Hal Needham things. Watching it again this time, I was like, this is just like Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just hang, or even the parts of Texas Chainsaw, it's like hanging out in the South in the 70s, like
with your buddy,
and like getting burgers and shakes and sodas at the local diner,
going to the fishing hole,
getting invited by the farmer to like have fried chicken. The whole joke he has about all the chicken he had,
yeah,
all the ways, it's almost like the Forrest Gump thing with shrimp with Bubba, you know. And there's just this, I watched on a Saturday afternoon, and I was like so fucking comfortable watching it. Like, I kind of just got on the wavelength of the movie, had a coffee, and I was kind of like just zoned out.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a really breezy, fun movie.
So, and the writer, producer, and songwriter, Jim McCullough,
yep.
I believe mm-hmm. his name is. Man, the end credit song of it yes. is like, you know, we're going to play it as the intro to this episode.
Thank God.
Man,
I would have it no other way.
It's almost like if you could imagine Will Ferrell doing a parody
yeah.
of like 70s country western, where he's just basically ad libbing, is like, the trucker is my mistress, and I got a black man on the corner, and you're just, it's just random things that he's like thinking of, but it's a real fucking song that was on the radio like in this area in the 70s, and it's great proof that no amount of parody, as much as I love Will Ferrell and that type of like comedy, like no amount of parody can ever match the real thing.
Like Megalopolis parts.
Oh,
like,
God.
Yeah. That's a whole different rabbit hole. But another thing about this movie is it looks really great. Like, it's like shot on...
It's shot by Dean Cundey.
Yeah, it's Cundey. And it's gorgeous. It also looks like a TV movie like Moon of the Wolf. It's really saturated skin tones, that 70s, everyone looks a little
real swampy,
little tan, swampy, sweaty, denim.
The girls are impossibly cute.
Oh, well, and then the Farrah Fawcett, a little bit Farrah Fawcett hair.
Yeah.
A little bit hippie chick thing.
Teased and feathered, like, hair, like, really looks great.
Yeah, the little like, pink t-shirt, like, it's just all, like, of a piece.
It does a terrific job of keeping the monster in the shadows the whole time, the same way that he kept Michael Myers in the shadows for John Carpenter, because this is, I believe, like 2 years before he shoots mm-hmm. Halloween.
It's like
for 76, Carpenter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, but yeah, it looks tremendous.
Yeah. You showed up here for the first time when we did like one of our little marathons, mm-hmm. and you were like, I think you even said, like, this seems like a Martin kind of movie before. I think you hadn't seen it either.
No, I hadn't.
And we were both.
Synapse just put that new Blu-ray out.
Yeah, I need to get that. Cause yeah.
It's real cheap on Amazon for some reason.
I'm going to buy it right after we finish recording.
Yeah, because I would watch this movie a million times because, like you said, it's just, it's a great Sunday afternoon, couple beers, and maybe some pizza kind of movie.
And you could talk during it. It's like, and then just kind of zone back in. It's
the plot's almost completely inconsequential. They're looking for Bigfoot.
Yep.
That's about it.
There's no real, there's moments of, but it's mostly just hanging out. Oh, and let's not forget, you got Jack Elam with top billing, old walleye Jack Elam, who's really good in it. The opening scene is also very cool, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The opening kill.
It has like a real kind of Jaws vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's just in the, you know, like the backwoods swamp, and they're attacked by Bigfoot.
And you know I like swamps, so that's,
So, Night of the Demon. I don't even know where to start with this movie, frankly, because to bring porn back into it, it's made by a former gay porn director who's going under the pseudonym here, Jim West,
mm-hmm.
But his real name is James Wasson. He made a bunch of, I looked up some of his porn, and like one of them was called like What the Boys Eat. I'm going to guess we already know the answer to that in that movie.
Chicken wings?
Dick.
Oh, penis.
Yes, penis. but the thing about the movie is that even if you didn't know somebody who made porn worked on it, you would watch it, and it's structured in a way that feels like pornography because
it's set PC in that.
It's all set PC. It's just like, here's some talking for 2-3 minutes, kill scene. Here's some talking, kill scene. Here's some talking, they go into the woods, kill scene. But the thing that's super inventive about the movie is that it takes – the notion of Bigfoot as a legend and builds around that because it's all a bunch of like little like, did you hear about those Girl Scouts that he killed? Did you hear about that biker that he killed? And then it flashes back and it's like this little vignette of like a biker literally getting his dick ripped off.
Yeah.
And then, which is like the most cum shoddy, because it literally like you see the hand rip the penis off, and then he keeps on focus, and there's literally just blood
out of a nub,
jutting out of a nub,
and a piece of skin coming out of it. It's crazy.
It's amazing prosthetics, and also like straight pornographic, just with blood instead of semen.
Well, and there is a similarity with a lot of these movies, because you can feel with a lot of these films, again, we were saying earlier, stretching for time, right? And
I don't feel with this one much as the others.
But maybe
in the first act, it goes on a little long.
Yeah, so to get to the point of the story early on, it takes some time. But a lot of these have these moments of, it's an interviewee flashback thing that shoots to another place in time, which I feel like is a way of, cool, we can make that scene as long as we want that we're cutting to. It also is a way to, like, change location in a natural way. But a lot of these are built around the campfire mentality.
Right.
Of you build this legend, and it really – and I think this one, what – kind of playing off what you're saying, too, I think, like you said, builds upon the Bigfoot thing because – you have the things we're supposed to know about Bigfoot, and then it adds this really, really violent overtone to it, right? Plus,
Bigfoot's fucked up in this movie.
Plus, you get a cult, and you get like
a redneck cult.
You get like
Bigfoot kills a guy with an axe.
Yeah, that's the weird one for me. I mean, obviously there's weirder scenes.
That's the weird one.
Yeah, that's where I draw the line.
What about when he kills the Girl Scouts by picking them up and smashing them together, and for whatever reason they have knives in their hands
and they're stabbing each other.
And they're stabbing each other while he smashes each other, the girls into one another, like they're flesh symbols. Like, this movie is fucking bonkers.
It kind of reminds me of watching it for the first time with you, reminds me of the first time we saw Patrick Still Lives.
Right.
And both very like,
also made by an Italian pornographic filmmaker and starring actual porn stars.
Yeah, that movie's fucking bananas.
I don't think we could ever get away with a Patrick Still Lives episode itself.
We did Exhumed that.
That year, and frankly, nobody would ever listen to it.
Yeah,
but like we would have to do like a whole like Italian exploitation kind of centered like the real like Italian oddities episode. But like everybody would be like, Patrick Still Lives. What are these guys fucking on about?
Well, I remember – I actually told my friend about it yesterday because I was like, oh, yeah. One of the craziest things I've ever seen, we were talking horror, as Patrick Still Lives. He goes, oh, I've seen the first one. It's like a good sequel. I was like, dude, I don't even know where to start with you, brother. It's fucking
– is it a good sequel? Well, here's the first question. Is it a sequel at all?
Not really.
It's true Italian trash of like, here's a thing that made a bunch of movie overseas. We're just going to rip it off and remake it ourselves for no money.
And make it really fucked up.
Yeah, and have a bunch of boobs and gore and a lady getting impaled through her vagina, out her mouth, with a psychically controlled...
Poker.
Yep.
Remember
watching that scene with an audience of complete strangers?
People were booing it.
You know what? Fuck those people. That's what I have to say about it. I was cheering.
You and I were going, oh, shit.
I was like, oh, man. Do you think she's dead?
Martin, is she dead?
Is that how sex works?
Are they wrestling?
I don't. My penis isn't that big. But, no, I mean, to take it back to the point, though, is that there is an element to this of, like, pure titillation. Like, he's making a movie to get, no pun intended, a rise out of you.
Yeah.
The entire time he's poking you in the ribs. He's showing you really salacious sexual and violent imagery. And then, I mean, the thing is, the most iconic piece of Night of the Demon is the dick ripping.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows about
it's called the dick-ripping Bigfoot movie. Yeah.
Yeah, people commonly refer to this as the movie where Bigfoot rips a man's penis off.
Yep.
But The thing is, that might not be the craziest fucking thing in the movie. Bigfoot rapes an underage girl and impregnates her.
With a monster baby.
And then she has a monster baby that her dad, I guess in true terms, does the latest stage abortion.
Yep.
He delivers the baby and kills it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and then she lives. That's the nuttiest flashback sequence is like, so it's set up, I guess, for those who have never seen Night of the Demon, it's set up the same way as Shriek of the Mutilated or A Creature from Black Lake,
yeah.
Is that it's a bunch of researchers who are going to find Bigfoot for whatever reason. And they go into the wilderness. They recount all these tales that they've heard about this violent Sasquatch creature who also... You want to talk about one of the awesomest opening credits, too.
Mm.
The opening kill where he kills the guy, and then the guy's blood drains and goes and fills
the
giant Bigfoot imprint in the mud, and then Night of the Demon appears over it. Like, that's pretty creative shit. But, like, they go and talk to all of the, you know, tell all of these tales about Bigfoot to one another. They get into the rural South, and then they find this semi-catatonic girl in this old dilapidated house and more or less like hypnotize her to do like hypnotherapy to like bring out repressed memories. Yeah,
and she was also the one being offered up to Bigfoot for some rape thing.
Yeah.
By the cult. Yeah.
And like the redneck cult like is going to put her for sacrifice, I guess. But then we find out in this extended flashback sequence that comes with 20 minutes left in the movie, mind you, that Bigfoot fucked her when she was like, I don't know, 13, yeah. Maybe? Like, full-on rapes her, and we see Bigfoot's O-face when he nuts in her. Which, dick-ripping aside, that's the one where I was like, well, I think we may have crossed the line here.
It's a movie that feels made by an unwell person.
Yeah.
Like, you're like...
You're in the hands of fucked up people.
Well, yeah, right, and it's not like a horror film where you're like, you go see Don't Breathe, and it's you like Fede being cheeky and pushing the boundary.
Yeah.
This is like, no, these are psycho fucking porn weird people who are like, oh, this is what a horror movie's like.
Probably doing massive mounds of blow behind the scenes.
Oh, seriously.
And yeah. Like, and then you get to the final siege where Bigfoot comes.
Oh my God.
And the end slaughter where he kills everybody in the fucking basement, rips a man's intestines out and starts swinging them around.
Like 2001 style, like.
Yeah, like, around his head like a fucking lasso or like, you know, an emo singer whips the microphone over his head. You're just like, this movie has reached a different orbit, my brother.
It does continue. There are some obviously sloggy slow moments, but for the most part,
I don't know,
compared to the other films, probably the fewest, but this one, like, it does keep a pretty good fever pitch, like, for most of the film, and especially, like you said, the last 20 minutes is pretty wild.
And it looks strangely good. That's the other thing.
Well, especially that transfer.
That transfer looks amazing, but also he has that weird, like, smear something on the lens, but yep. Also he does like a red filter where it's mm-hmm. like Bigfoot vision when he's like stalking them. So I said this to you off mic before we started, and I'm gonna hold to it. Night of the Demon is exactly what I'm looking for whenever I start investigating this kind of trash cinema.
Yeah.
Because it delivers, like you said, a tone that isn't just cheeky. You feel like you're watching the product of like a diseased mind.
Yeah.
And it's sort of inept, but also like has a bunch of visual flair to it where you can watch and you're like, you have a lot of ideas in your head. You're not necessarily the most capable person of getting them all out onto celluloid, but watching you try and like that intersection of ineptitude and inspiration and
passion, yeah,
leads to like true outsider art. And I really believe this. Like a lot of people will tell you that Night of the Demon is just great trash horror cinema. But for me, it's like, I think it transcends trash cinema in the same way that something like The Astrologer does or whatever, and becomes true weirdo art.
I would agree. I mean, it's just full on avant-garde. And again, maybe to put what you said another way, it's maybe not all, it's not purposeful, but the final.
Or intentional.
The intentional, the final, you know, the final piece of media is, you know, is completely one of a kind, you yeah. know, and it's consistently entertaining. It's weird. It's got a lot on its mind.
Hard to see for a long time before yep. Severin kind of rescued it and restored it.
Well, and like, I mean, to your point too, like you and I, you more than me, but like have spent so much time going through the library of like Vinegar Syndrome and thing, or even just or Tubi, right? And you're and 99% of the time, you're like, oh, this is why no one else would release this movie. This is not a forgotten classic. This is a piece of shit that no one really needs to see. This is like the rare exception to that.
It's the role. Diamond in the rough. Yeah. It's the reason why you keep watching this shit.
To hopefully find it.
Is because you're like, I'm going to watch 30 of these fucking things, and they're going to be 2.5 stars, and I'll never think about them again. But then I'm going to get Night of the Demon, and it's going to be like a bolt of lightning hitting the tip of my penis.
I mean, it's not as good of a film, but like a film for me, like Mako, The Jaws of Death, right? Like going through the Griffey movies, and a lot of those are pretty sloggy. Then you get to Mako, Jaws of Death, you're like, that was really special. You know, that was a really unique idea that we really enjoyed watching together. You know, so there are those kind of like, even that era of like drive-in movies that will just kind of pop out. You're like, oh,
well, that's kind of cool.
That was, I really like that. That was, you know.
Yeah, it's really terrific.
Yeah.
You want to get to questions?
Let's do it.
All right.
I pulled out this morning on the road to who knows where. I don't know where I'm headed, but I know when I get there. And poor good old buddy, 18-wheeler whizzes by. Mark a 60, while smoke is taking pictures but a smile. Exit and truck stop, wrong along the way. Old men in pickups, nothing much to say. And I'm looking for the truth, Lord, in a cloud of light. It seems I see the clearest when I close my eyes. Freedom's not something that you earn. Fear is only something that you learn. But believing is more than state of mind. And the answer to my question's what I find. Traveling bumpy highways.
And we're back with questions about 1980s Night of the Demon. Martin, we're going to forego the ranking because, frankly, I don't think there's enough Bigfoot movies for us to do a ranking.
At least
You know, that we've at least covered here. You could throw in stuff like Exists or the movie that I, frankly, picked for my double feature coming up later. But we came up with a good replacement question, I think, in that we're going to ask, if you had your choice between any other mythical beast, cryptid, urban legend style monster that you could make like a trash horror version of its tail out of, in the same vein as like Night of the Demon, which one would you pick?
I mean, they kind of already did it with Incident at Loch Ness, which I like. That kind
old Nessie.
But I would do Nessie. I would do a full-on schlock, gory
Incident at Loch Ness. That's the one with Herzog and Zach Penn.
Zach
and everything,
Penn did
right?
it, and it's done like a fake, like a
mockumentary.
Yeah, and but I would do a full on Nessie gore fest, and I would like really fuck with Nessie's biology that like she could spit things out of her mouth onto like the boat that could attack you, almost like what they did with the Cloverfield monster.
Sure,
because you need something on the ground. You need something that you just can't hang on the boat, you know? Just want some little moving creatures to come for you.
Okay. So Nessie can't get out of the water, but she has minions, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the Hodag, though it's from your neck of the woods. You got me so interested in the weird backstory of it. And I guess for those at home who have no fucking idea what that is, because I didn't until I met you, because that is a very...
It's only Rhinelander.
Wisconsin.
Just one
Rhinelander, because they even have a whole festival.
It's one of the biggest country festivals in the country.
Called the Hodag Festival. Mm-hmm. Can you fill in the listeners as to what the Hodag actually is?
So the Hodag, straight up, though, is like in no way do people think it's out there. Like, unlike Bigfoot, I don't believe anyone. It is completely...
They don't think it's real.
Yeah, it's a completely fabricated thing. I believe it started with some Native American stuff, but it looks like a dragon. It has four legs. It's down like a cat. It has kind of a cat face. It's got horns, spikes down its back to kind of a barbed, like... ankylosaurus kind of tail.
It almost looks like a float that would be in like a Chinese parade.
That, or also just, I think it's the equivalent of like what you used to see at like a carnival of like sewn together, like the mermaid used to be of like, oh, sure. We'll sew this shit together. And it's something we found in the South Pacific, kind of like an amalgamation of other creatures. It was actually featured on Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated, one of the newer cartoon series.
Really?
Which, if you haven't watched, is actually like a good show. Like, Jeffrey Combs is on there playing Hapecraft. He's Lovecraft. It's Lovecraft versus Harlan Ellison, voiced by Harlan Ellison. Like, they go deep on, like...
Oh, wow.
It's, like, for adults. Like, it's, like, for kids, but, like, the horror callbacks are insane. But one episode is literally about the Hodag. Like, it's a monster. But what would you do? I told you about this like 3 years ago?
A little while.
Yeah.
What would I do? I would do an entire kind of investigation about how the Hodag is part of that very specific Wisconsin culture. Because the thing about Wisconsin that's interesting is when you start digging into it is that like Wisconsin has its own beer and Spotted Cow that you can't get outside of that one little region. You have the Hodag, you have these pockets of lore, like when, you know, where it was like a vacation destination for like John Dillinger and Al Capone.
That was where the fight was. It was little, whatever, right north of where my cabin is.
Right, like exactly.
The shootout in Public Enemies was there.
So there's all of this for a place that you wouldn't think to associate a ton of urban legends with. Wisconsin, I feel like you could build an entire movie around like these people who go there and experience all of this lore about this state that really nobody thinks about too much in those terms, and like get into like what's the weird backstory behind Spotted Cow beer, why can't you get it, or even because like it's a thing too for like people from Chicago and everything. They want Spotted Cow beer
or any new Glarus beer.
Like they literally will smuggle it in because it's illegal to transport it across.
I don't think
it's
illegal. It's not like Coors,
but this is my point. Oh yeah, that's the thing is that it's grown this reputation and the legend has gotten to the point to where it is print the legend and people actually believe that it's illegal to take Spotted Cow across state lines into Chicago. Why?
Yeah.
You'd have to watch the movie. Just in the same way that you investigate, like, where did the Hodag come from? Why did this myth kind of grow? And, like, I like the fact that nobody, to your point, believes that it's real at all, because that would be part of the movie, is that it's like, you know, it's all bullshit. Like, we just made this shit up, and we have a festival about it, and blah, blah, blah. But, like, what if it's actually out there, and what if it's a real thing?
And it was based on that actual real thing.
Exactly.
And it looks different than the obviously Disney-fied version of the UCN t-shirts.
That would be the movie.
I love that.
Double feature with Night of the Demon.
You go first.
So I picked Night of the Demon and this movie from 2006 called Abominable, which I watched for this and had a lot of fun with. It's directed by Ryan Schifrin, who's actually Lalo Schifrin's son. Lalo Schifrin, the famous composer who did like the Mission Impossible theme, the Amityville Horror, a bunch of stuff with Clint Eastwood for like the Dirty Harry movies. I think he's in like his 90s now, but like he's scored like a million classic movies. He had a son, Ryan, who directed Abominable, which is, I guess the easiest way to describe this movie is almost like Rear Window with Bigfoot, because it's about a guy. The story is weird. It's like a guy and his wife get into a climbing accident. He kind of like this mountainous, like I think Colorado cabin. It kills his wife and it paralyzes him and it puts him in a wheelchair. This is the guy's played by Matt McCoy, who a lot of people I guess will know as the dad from Hand That Rocks the Cradle. I will always know him as Lloyd Braun from Seinfeld, because I as soon as he shows up in it, I've seen him in other things too, because he's been like
LA Confidential, TV movie.
LA Confidential stuff. But every time I see his face, I just hear George Costanza's mom screaming, "Why can't you be more like Lloyd Braun?" But like he is like basically being taken back to the cabin with a nurse, and it feels like it's part of some kind of like facing your trauma sort of therapy. Mm-hmm. That he's going up there. But the nurse he's with, who's named Otis, is like the shittiest dude ever. He's like, he might be, next to Nurse Ratched, the worst screen nurse like ever invented. Like, he like abuses the shit out of him in the wheelchair and drinks like vodka with his soy milk the entire time. It's just a really strange character. But they take this wheelchair bound gentleman to a cabin in the woods, where he had this terrible tragedy. He's stuck in the cabin, and then next door, a bunch of very hot women, you know, rent the cabin next door for the weekend because they're basically doing like a bachelorette party. And then Sasquatch attacks. And this Sasquatch is very much in the vein of the Night of the Demon Bigfoot, in that he's a big, hulking, evil motherfucker who's just there to kill. And kill he does, because the gore in this movie is pretty awesome. Like, a dude gets his whole face bitten off at one point, and like intestines are ripped out, and it really going to like I think it was produced for sci-fi, and it's mm-hmm. going into like a real kind of like splatter zone. But also it's got a great supporting cast, because it's kind of in the era where they were starting to do, and Rob Zombie's becoming popular and everything, and a lot of people are starting to do what I've commonly referred to as horror convention casting.
Yeah.
And that, like, Dee Wallace Stone shows up as, like, the wife of a dude whose, like, cattle is mutilated in, like, the intro scene, the prologue to the movie. Lance Henriksen and Jeffrey Combs. Jeffrey Combs attached to, like, an oxygen machine and chain-smoking cigarettes, and he runs like the local gas station. He's almost kind of like, but
the,
like
the doomsayer,
but he's like the fun version of it, because it's Jeffrey fucking Combs behind like Coke bottle glasses and really doing a whole crazy thing with it. But he and Lance Henriksen go into the wilderness to hunt Bigfoot together, and like it's just a fun like 91 minute super violent creature feature that when it pops off, like, it's, you know, there's no subtext, there's no deeper meaning. It's just Bigfoot fucks people up. Oh, and then Paul Gleason from Breakfast Club is the local shithead sheriff.
Oh, perfect. I was gonna say he's gotta be the sheriff.
Ignoring everybody's phone calls and being like, it's all a prank, nobody believes in it. And like, he's totally doing, you know, the Breakfast Club principle. Like, he's even introduced drinking out of a coffee cup that says, if you mess with the bull,
get the,
you know. So, but it's a fun, knowing little movie that's just meta enough, but is like really only interested in just having Bigfoot like fuck shit up.
So I was trying to think of something. I was like, okay, something gory, you know, something wild and zany like Night of the Demon. But the one I came up with was more because, well, the subject matter, but also the director it comes from, is Return of Swamp Thing. Because I think,
oh, that's great.
Wynorski's a guy who dances between softcore and you know, more respectable cinema, right? He's had his, and
well, softcore and just straight like genre stuff.
Genre stuff, but I mean, still like this was.
I wouldn't call Chopping Mall respectable.
No, but I yeah, you're right. But you think about Bear Wench Project and movies like that, and yeah. then so lots of boobs. But you know, while Return of Swamp Thing is PG-13, it's about as like horny as it can be for PG-13. You know,
sure.
And it's
Heather Locklear, man.
Heather Locklear. I love, I saw this as a kid. I was obsessed with Swamp Thing as a character, and I still am. I'm still a huge fan of the comic. And I have the record, the soundtrack over there on my shelf, because my brother, they shot it in Savannah, Georgia, where my nephew had his first birthday. It's this like biological reserve. They just shot it back in this park. So they had a local screening there, I think, when Norsky was there, and they had these like really limited edition records. So huge fan of that movie. It's really schlocky. I saw it here at the Alamo. They played it, I think, last year as something.
Great rubbery creature feature. Lots of dudes in goofy suits.
Really goofy. Winorski, when he hits, like, it's got that also perfectly amateurish, you know.
This one's more polished than most.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. And there was a little more money behind it. It was Michael Uslan who, like, helped get, like, Burton's Batman. Like, it's still, it's still Warner Brothers, like, adjacent.
There's the weird, goofy kids in it, though.
They're the best part.
No, you think that's the best part, because
it's the red-haired kid, and he's like, oh... Well, they're looking at the play. It was, oh, neat. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah, that movie's great.
I love it.
So instead of doing remake, we're going to ask the question that if you were to do a Bigfoot movie, what would you do with it? Just in general.
I think I'd do something really primal and do a very like Predator Prey style, like of... really, really, really pared down, almost like it even said it like Wild West era, like up in like this, in like the like some prospector who went from like California, like up into the Pacific Northwest,
sure,
and comes across Bigfoot, and it's just like man versus beast, or a group of trappers kind of thing, or a group of like early loggers in that area facing down like a you know, $2 million. But just like amazing gore, but also just like really, really amazing like production design for the era, you know, bringing all the awesome old saws and things like that. Almost like that episode, my favorite episode of X-Files, Darkness Falls, with the dust mites, with the mites that cocoon people. But like that with Bigfoot, like a logging camp and then Bigfoot coming into it, like really pared down, almost like carpentry, Howard Hawksy.
Sure.
You know, like men versus the beast. Kind of thing.
I would do Black Bigfoot. It's the one thing that we actually brought up. We were talking about how these movies are 99.9% driven and starring by white rednecks. I want to do a Black Bigfoot movie. I want to do a movie where dudes, you know, from the hood go into the wilderness and encounter Sasquatch. And like, because it's just something that we've never really seen before. And because also, like, all jokes aside, like, imagine like Jordan Peele doing a Bigfoot movie in the same kind of abstract way that he did Extraterrestrials with Nope.
Yeah.
And like just exploring like why have black dudes never seen Bigfoot? Why have we never had a movie like that? Why? Like, get under the actual surface of it, like too.
The myth making.
And play around with the idea of, like, you know, having this culture clash with a Southern white culture, too. Yeah. Kind of in the same way that it looks like, it tonally, it would be the new Ryan Coogler movie.
That looks so good. Oh, my God.
With Michael B. Jordan, Sinners. In that it has this, like, because that's the other thing. You could even do a black period piece Bigfoot movie where you have, you know, the Black South encountering Bigfoot in this Sinners. I think when they were talking about production, like ramping up to that trailer, and that trailer is fucking incredible. Michael B. Jordan playing fucking twins who are like maybe monster hunters or something. But
say
like
less, dude.
Everybody is like, oh, it's a vampire movie. That's what it's supposed to be in kind of all of the press releases and Deadline and Hollywood
Jim
Reporter
Crow
stuff.
South, vampire,
it's Jim Crow South. They fight vampires. Sure, whatever. But like same idea and same in tone, like general tone of like maybe even the Black South encounters Bigfoot. And like, why haven't you had that movie? I had that thought while watching one of these the entire time where I was like, you don't see many black dudes interacting with Bigfoot. Why is that?
Well, and it does feel
how
like,
come?
Well, and it does feel again like a lot of these, especially the doc ones, it's so wrapped up in like almost like hillbilly culture.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, right. And it's like just not even the movies themselves, but the people who talk about it are these, you know, are these like lower income white coal miner areas. Like West Virginia is a big for cryptids as well. And
yeah,
and that
it's
kind
almost
of thing.
Like not part of black culture or black lore.
Exactly. Exactly.
So finally, Face Melter, Night of the Demon, yay or nay?
The definition.
Undoubtedly.
The definition of what am I watching? You show it to me, you're like, get ready.
Yeah.
And watching
strap
it again,
in, baby.
And you're just like, it does not disappoint.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that you put on for anyone and they're completely unprepared for where it goes. And even us describing all of the fucked up shit that occurs in Night of the Demon still won't prepare you for like the experience of actually seeing Bigfoot's O-face.
it's genuinely a blast. Like it is, if you got like some friends together for a horror night and you're like, what's something like none of us have seen before? And like, oh, this is the dick ripping. It's not just the dick ripping Bigfoot movie. There's a lot more to it.
Well, it's like we were talking about, we're going to going to the Exhumed 24-hour marathon. And we were talking about how I don't think Night of the Demons ever played Exhumed at all. It might have at some point, knowing them, and I just missed it.
It would kill.
But it's never played the 24-hour-thon. And, like, could you imagine watching that with an auditorium full of strangers at, like, 1 in the morning when you're already kind of delirious, not sure what you're watching is real? And then you throw on fucking Night of the Demon and Sasquatch rips that man's penis off? People would fucking lose it.
Even if you know what's coming, like, the scene, it's my second time watching it, and you kind of forget how fucking wild it is.
It would shake the pillars of heaven.
So, yeah, big recommend from us at Secret Handshake.
Huge A-plus Face Melter status. Welcome to the club, Night of the Demon.
Big A-plus O-face.
Walt Martin, this has been great.
It was fun, dude.
Another hairy, smelly Sasquatch episode.
Here in spooky season still.
Yep, so. We are. And what do we got next?
We are moving on to another kind of pick of mine.
Very Martin-coded with Quatermass.
Yeah, so big Nigel Neal fan. So we're going to use Quatermass in the pit as a jumping off point to things that were really inspired by him and a couple more films inside of the Quatermass filmography. A lot of fun stuff. Also a movie we saw at Exhumed. So
yeah,
it's going to be a good one. A
lot of fun. Stay tuned to Secret Handshake to learn more.
Bye.
Indian legends tell about a big hairy man that roamed for many years throughout their land. White men laughed and said these legends weren't true, but now old Bigfoot has made man a fool. Bigfoot roams throughout his forest land, feet twice the size of any man. With the moon shining bright on a running stream, you can hear him yelling his mournful scream. The scientists believe he's a missing link. Some people say that he's extinct. Others say something from a bad old dream. But listen to Bigfoot's hey, mournful scream.
Bigfoot is a friend of all the wildlife band. He feeds a little raccoon right from his hand, while the old chipmunk sets a-chattering on his knee. Happiness blinds him, so he scarcely can see. Bigfoot's very cunning while walking his grounds. His pets a bear and cougar, keep away man's hounds. Rising from the ground, smacking dust from his seat, with a great big smile, slowly makes his retreat. Scientists believe he's a missing link. Some people think that he's extinct. Others say something from a bad old dream. But listen to Bigfoot, a mournful scream. Pretty soon modern day man so sane will try and take Bigfoot from his domain. The tranquilizer guns that sting and smart, his heels a whole sadness and heavy hearts. Scientists believe he's a messing link. Some people think that he's extinct. Others say something from a bad old dream. But listen to Bigfoot,